looking at new writing in general, and you mentioned Me and My Mates, what do you think that the new writing scene in Britain at the moment is like from your point of view? I mean, here we are in 2008. Do you think it's really lively, bubbling, or what?
It is in the sense that there's a lot of new plays on, and there's a lot of new names and faces coming through, and that's all very exciting. I have to say, I've had such a busy year, I've not got to see half as much theatre as I'd have liked to, so a lot of my sense of the sector is through people like yourself, secondhand, through reviews and features and so on. I mean, I have to say that in terms of the kinds of plays that, that would interest me enough to go and pay 15, 20 quid to go and see, they come up maybe two or three times a year.
And that's what kind of plays would you be looking for if you wanted actually, as you say, to pay to get in?
Well, the thing is, we have a there's an awful lot of resources poured into breaking new writers, and that's great. You know, it's great that that's new blood that keeps the sector alive. But the side effect of that is that we do seem to get a preponderance of first and second plays, which are often fairly inward looking, and you know, have yet to writers that have yet to reach their full potential in terms of sourcing that. Originality of thought and you know, mastering the research process and how to wring kind of you know, extraordinary drama out of that, and there's a gap when it comes to supporting mid-career writers, I think, and a lot of those, you know, writers will win a competition or you know, get a first play on at Soho or somewhere like that, and you often don't hear from them again. And it's a real shame. There's no, there's not really a career structure, there's not really any support. You'll kind of, you'll have your first play produced and then they'll say, that was nice for you, wasn't it? Goodbye. I mean, you notice the difference when you do see a like Payne's Plough often get behind writers and produce play after play after play, and you see the difference that makes. They very quickly in a few years end up at the National or wherever. But there's very few companies that do that, and it's a shame. I think the sector does need to work more closely together to pass on writers, or to not just break the new. There's, I think, we slightly fetishise the new play, and actually new plays are necessarily not as good plays as the writer will eventually end up writing. So,
well, there is,
they need
a culture of novelty, isn't there?
That's right. And the young, we love it. The younger they are, the better.
Yes.
As well, there's that. But then, you know, the effect of that is young people will necessarily have a limited experience of the world, you know. So,
and also a limited experience of their craft.
That's right, yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's great to see so many on, but I'd like to see more support for them too. Particularly, I think, in terms of pushing them to, I mean, it's great that the writer is at the centre of everything in theatre. It's very, you know, when you have meetings with these TV people who tell you what they want you to write, it's all a bit different, and you get a sense of how spoiled you are in theatre. But there is... when it's handed over to you, what do you want to write about? I think actually theatres could do with pushing writers a little bit more to particularly to research and to investigate material beyond their own experience, and they should facilitate that a bit more. I mean, I'd love to see theatres with big libraries attached to them, or theatres with links to the thinkers of the day, you know, institutions, particularly in London, where, you know, one of the global centres of learning and expertise in all sorts of areas, you know. And theatres, if a writer comes and says, I'd like to do something about the financial crisis, but I can barely add up, you know, theatres should be able to say, well, we can arrange access to these banks or this specialist, or, you know, they should be, I'd like to see theatres being more hubs of information and knowledge so that writers can access all that stuff.
Yeah, you're quite right, because I was talking to the producer at Complicité a few weeks ago, and she told me that they, as a company, can ask somebody who's a genius about mathematics to come in to talk to them about maths.
Brilliant.
And so on, which is great, but that's quite unusual, isn't
it?
It
is very unusual.
In some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were talking about television, and radio. Do you think those are also essential areas for writers in mid-career? Otherwise, I mean, you would starve to death if you didn't have another job, wouldn't you?
Yes, by and large. I mean, my the other half of my life is in the education sector, and I'm writer in residence in a school, and I love that. I've not done any TV, though I've been for a lot of meetings. Nothing has come of them as yet. I did my first radio play this year, and really enjoyed it, actually. And BBC Radio, of course, is the most prolific producer of new plays in the country. It's about four or five a week or something.
Yeah.
So more even. So, and I love being able to experiment with form on radio. I mean, that really suited me for the play that I did this year. Yeah, I mean, those are places where you can go, and if you've got a good agent, they'll be able to, you know, set you up.
Because unusually for a youngish, I'm going to call you, writer, I mean, you've, excuse me, also written articles in newspaper and some journalism. And one of the things you pointed out was that commission fees are so low that if really, if you took a year to write a play, you literally would starve.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's about, the Writers Guild TMA minimum is around 6,500. And once you take out agents' fees, take out VAT on agents' fees, you take out tax, you know, you're left with about $5,000 or something. And it's that doesn't, that is the minimum that the Writers Guild recommends. Most theatres could take that to mean standard. So very rarely will they pay.
But even if you got £10,000 for a play, which I think you might from the National or the Royal Court or the top end there, even there you'd have to perhaps write three and have three staged
To make a salary that you would in another kind of job.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's true. And the thing is that there's no, that fee is the same whether or not you have a 3 or 4 month research period and then write the play, and as it is if you were to just start writing the play and do a Me and My Mates play with three people in a room, you know, about whatever you know about already. And so is it any wonder really that writers just do the easy option, because you've got to finish that play and write the next one just to make a living. So that system, such as it is responsible for a lot of the reason why we have so many sort of small insular plays as well.
But on the other hand, Britain is particularly rich in that there are other sources for, once again, I'm going to call you youngish playwright.
31, Alex, is that young? I don't know.
Well, you tell me. You're as young as you feel. We have lots of other sources. In other words, there is education, there is the health service, there are literally other places which do drama or which develop plays. So could you talk a bit about your experiences in those kind of areas, outside the, if you like, the mainstream?
I mean, I do loads of that kind of work, and I've got probably more experience doing that than I have in mainstream theatre. Just because there is so much of that kind of work, and it's invisible to, when most writers are starting out, you don't know that it's there. The critics never cover it, and it's off the radar. But actually, it's one of the biggest employment sectors for creative artists of all kinds, actually. I work as a writer in residence at Mulberry School for Girls, which is a state secondary in Tower Hamlets, which has specialist art status, which is a new government scheme where they get an uplift in funding to have artists in residence. So there's me and an actor, there's a sculptor, I think, there's a sound designer.
And do you work, what, with the sixth form?
Or? I work with all levels. I mean, I mostly focus on upper secondary, so year 10 and above, including their sixth form. I teach, I run after school playwriting clubs for the kids, but also for staff, which is really interesting. And I write a new play for the students to perform at the Edinburgh Festival each summer, one of which you mentioned at the start, Mendy Night was last year's play, Stolen Secrets was this year's, and I've agreed to a third year next year as well.
And the interesting thing for me is that it's a very multiracial school, is that
right? It's 98% Bangladeshi Muslim girls, just due to its catchment area.
So that gives you an insight or an experience on a day-to-day basis of meeting a social group which perhaps normally you'd never meet.
And that is really a really important thing to me, and that's all part of research. I mean, it's a two-way street, is that the kids get to work with professionals, but then, of course, you get access to all kinds of material and groups of people, and which I think becomes more and more important as you move down your career as a writer. It's very easy to sit in your home office pontificating about the world without taking any active part in it. And it's that sort of thing that keeps you connected and keeps you real. And the spin-off for me, I mean, I write a lot of plays as professional commissions for, I've got a long-standing relationship with Half Moon Young People's Theatre,
which is just down
the road from Mulberry School, also in Tower Hamlets, Limehouse. And they've produced two teenage plays, one of which, Locked In, you mentioned at the start, is being revived and is touring at the moment.
And can you talk a bit about that? What's that about?
That's a hip-hop drama set in a pirate radio station in East London, and it's the story of two 16-year-old friends, a Bengali boy and a black Caribbean MC, one's MC, one's DJ, and at the point at which they're having to make decisions about their lives, leaving school and doing GCSEs, and they're much more interested in their pirate radio show and putting out CDs and breaking into the music industry. At the same time, it's a play about the kinds of negative influences that those kinds of characters, young people, can often be preyed on by. So the local gangster wanting them to do them a favour, to start dealing in school. Tariq, the Bengali Muslim character, was brought up in care and doesn't have a real family, and is kind of seduced by the radical politics of an uncle with some extreme Islamist views. And then there's a third character, Zahida, who is a new girl in school who they both fall for and end up squabbling over. And that escalates in the play and to a point where I won't ruin the ending. But it's all in the format of a live pirate radio broadcast. And so it's almost a musical in that it's like it's in hip-hop verse and live rapping and DJing.
And did you develop this with the kids there?
Yeah, that was developed over years at Half Moon, a couple of years. They have an extraordinary scheme there where you, as a writer, you do an attachment where you propose an idea for a new play and write a 5-10 minute scene from it. They then get you into what's called Careers in Theatre, which is a week where they get about 80 kids a day in from local schools to stage a play in a day. And they it's like a miniaturisation of the process. So some of them will do sound, some of them set design, acting, lighting, whatever.
But in one day.
And they use your text as the stimulus piece. And it's a different set of 80 kids every day for 5 days. And you can watch how they don't have to do your actual piece verbatim. It can be a stimulus which they then create their own piece from. And it's an incredible way of test driving the material past the target audience at a really formative stage. And so that's how Locked In develops. And once you've done that, then I wrote the first draft. We then did a reading of that first draft in a secondary school nearby and got their thoughts. I did a second, third draft, and at each stage it was either using their youth theatre or a local school. We would kind of run it past the kids.
And what kind of ideas did they, what kind of things flew at you?
Oh, great stuff. I mean, partly it was linguistic, because I kind of had to learn a whole new dialect, because the inner city London is full of slang and you
it
know,
changes rapidly.
All the time, all the time. It was also, it was partly just to check that the idea is watertight and that it rings true for them. And in a way, you're providing the bare bones, and they would actually take these characters, which were mere sketches at that point, and would put them up on their feet in improvisations, and all this incredible material would come out. They'd be giving you brilliant lines, brilliant ideas. You know, they changed the names of some of the characters for me. They gave them nicknames. The Zahida character, who's really mouthy, they christened her Lady Attitude. And so that was something that has stayed in. It was just, I suppose, you're getting them to play with the ideas behind the play as much as you are with the actual characters and story, and to test their reactions to some of the issues in the play, because there's a lot of ideas packed into it, and it's a lot about, again, identity, the theme here emerging in my work, and how you negotiate your identity in the face of the rest of society, and particularly if you're from an inner city ethnic group. That's the play focuses on that. It was an extraordinarily rich process to take an idea through, and one without a comparison in the adult sector, interestingly. I mean, I would never have been allowed to have developed a play over that long with an adult theatre company. I'd have been
on presumably
my own.
Do research that is so in depth.
Absolutely.
A lot of theatre companies send you to interview somebody for one
hour
or something.
Yeah,
or they send you to the Caribbean for 1 week's research.
Well, I've never had that. I'd look forward to that. But yeah, the Half Moon approach is completely immersive. And it's how you ensure authenticity as well. Because often the writers, playwrights are not often from the kinds of backgrounds of the kids that are Half Moon's target audience. So
yeah, so you get very cliched dialogue.
So it's to ensure that authenticity. And it's also where I got to experiment with verse for the first time. And at the start of this year, I wrote my first adult play in verse for Liquid Theatre, which is a small company, two guys who work at Lambda Drama School, and it's a contemporary Jacobean tragedy, five-act revenge tragedy, all in iambic pentameter. That is a direct, there's a direct lineage from Locked In to that play.
What's the title?
It's called Chimeras at the moment, the working title. which I'm told, of course, has changed. But anyway, the stuff that I do at Mulberry as well, the plays for Edinburgh, have a big verse influence, because partly because young people just respond to that so much. It makes the lines easier to learn. That's the other thing when you're dealing with them. But also, so much of their world is influenced by lyrics and hip hop in particular. So that's really the sector where I was given an incredible amount of artistic freedom, which I'm now bringing into the adult sector. And it would be nice, I guess, to see that acknowledged more by the adult sector, the companies, but also the press, really, because there's so much work in the young people's sector, and it's not crappy TIE stuff anymore. It's really high quality, and it has a direct, it's a training ground with a direct outcome in the adult sector.
On that challenging note, we've run out of time.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Finn
Kennedy. You're welcome. Thanks, Alex.